You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning and welcome to episode 88 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host, John Shipley. John, how have you been doing the past week?
88 episodes. We're almost at 100, dude.
That one's up there.
Can we synchronize 100 with like a notable like event?
That's what I'm saying. An event's a good idea. I was thinking that, like, I was having a hard time coming up with things since we record in different, quote, studios. But, yeah, we got to celebrate in some way.
Yeah.
An event record at, like, a bar or something.
Would have been a good week for it last week, you know, celebratory week. Trent Baalke stepped up to, as we call it, the batter's box at a Miller Electric Center. Took like a couple weeks, but you know, you were there. I thought, like, you know, 30-minute press conference. I just sitting there, like, I know I'm not a fan, and I definitely saw fan reactions. Like, I think Baalke could have said literally anything, and probably a lot of people would have been upset. It's just kind of the kind of aura that you know, like he kind of just has, like, in the fan base. But as a neutral observer sitting there, it was a pretty entertaining 30 minutes, I thought. You know, he was bobbing and weaving. Yeah.
Yeah, he was bobbing and weaving through all the questions, through all the reporters. His little, like, back and forth with Rick was probably my favorite about, like, Jadeveon Clowney. The fact that, like, Rick, like, named four names off the bat was just funny. So, yeah, it was definitely a performance for the ages. It was after not seeing some – just Jaguars football for a little bit. That was a good show.
And there are a couple others, like, too. Like, Josh Uche. I know Chase Young had some terrible plays against the Lions, but I still think Jaguars' defense is obviously better over the second half season if you add a little more juice. And then his answer, he talks about having Smoot, talks about having Chase on. Like, that's just where I think, like, and I guess that would lead to my first, like, the biggest impression from the press conference. He also talked about a young man that they drafted to develop. Obviously, you see Abdullah played five games last year. Once Smoot was back and, like, getting, like, his full size, like, share of reps, he was a, you know, healthy scratch the entire season. And it kind of seemed like that was one of the examples that, you know, Baalke kind of mentioned, that one of the bigger themes of the press conference was him saying that they just didn't have maybe the best developmental plans, you know, for rookies. You know, he was asked specifically about his own draft record and stuff, whether he's drafted enough blue chip players. He said, quote, "We feel we have some pretty good football players. Sometimes you have to execute the vision that you had for these players. Coach and I have talked about this last year's class in particular, the onboarding process of them, getting them up to speed, trusting them. You're in a developmental league now. You don't have time to say that we can shelf them for a year or shelf them for 2 years. You got to get them up to speed quick. And when you go in, you have as much collaboration as we do. Because trust me, we have a lot of collaboration on these decisions. It's not one person making these decisions. When you look at bringing up in a player and the vision that you have for them, at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, did we execute that vision or didn't we? If you ask coach, and certainly you're asking me right now, we've got to do a better job of that vision and executing it. I.e., every draft pick is good. And the ones that are not good, everybody picked them. But the ones that are good, they're not getting enough play time. Like, it was – the question basically was, have you drafted well enough in 3 years? And one thing I've noticed covering Bulky, especially since the 2022 draft is around draft time, he never says, I drafted these players or anything like that. He always likes to say, no, the Jaguars drafted them. We drafted them. That's kind of a way to, you know, like a – early, like, umbrella from, you know, the criticism. Like, no, like, it wasn't just me. So that's the way I kind of read that. So I'm saying, well, anybody who hasn't worked out, I'm not the only one who picked them. And for the guys who are still up in the air, it kind of seemed like he didn't think the Jaguars coaches. And I thought it was, like, you know, kind of a direct shot across the bow at, you know, Doug Peterson and the offensive coaching staff in particular. And even probably the outside defensive staff that they just – didn't play enough of his picks.
Yeah, which is interesting. The draft pick that he had that he just refused to name, Yasir Abdullah, he played 5 games and had 45 defensive snaps over the season, which is a little bit less than a full game. And he had 1 solo tackle, 1 quarterback hit, no sacks, no tackles for loss. And so, like, I feel like the whole development thing is a little bit of a chicken and egg thing a lot, where, like, I feel like Jags fans have been saying for a while, too, like, oh, like, maybe we've actually been drafting, like, good players for a while, but they just haven't developed. But it's obviously kind of hard to nail which one is which a lot of times, so because they go hand in hand so much. But, like, for 2023, I feel like it's pretty obvious, like, which one was worse off. Like, Brenton Strange, like, didn't show anything that so he, like, should be playing more snaps than Luke Farrell. And, like, Tank Bigsby, I feel like, is the biggest one of them all, where, like, the coaches did play him, and then he was just, like, literally giving up a lot of points and having a lot of turnovers. I felt like every other touch. So, like, I don't really know what Balky wanted them to do with that situation. And then there's guys like Abdullah, who's, like, barely playing and is a healthy scratch when the rest of, like, his group is healthy. Tyler Lacy, like, maybe flashed a couple times at the end of the season, but wasn't really much. And then the Ventrell Miller was, like, pretty much just got the Shaquille Griffin treatment, I feel like, this year.
Yeah, and then, like, I feel like probably the only couple guys he can make a case for and had an argument are guys like Antonio Johnson and then Parker Washington, Elijah Cooks, just because the rest of the receiver room, like, obviously, like, the veterans that they were playing in front of him.
Yeah. The receiver room that he built is, like, has such bad depth that, yeah, like, his undrafted rookie who can't get stay on the field and all the fans are claiming for is somehow a strength, okay.
He definitely a couple times came off talking like a guy who hadn't built the team he was talking about, right? that wasn't me, right? Like, he, like, signaled many areas.
Definitely, that, were a little bit all over the place of, like, how sometimes he would zoom all the way back and sometimes zoom all the way in.
Yeah. So, like, when it comes to the day two picks specifically, I think the issue really goes back to whatever vision they had to begin with. Like, what vision sold you that you needed a, like, what the team was missing was a power back in the third round. Even in Tank Bigsby's best range of outcomes, they're still a 9-8 team, right? Like does that really, like, shift, like, anything for them? Even if he, like, had, like, a semi-productive season as a backup running back, like, their starting running back still hit 1,000 yards. It's not – that was the whole thing to begin with. There wasn't an immediate need there. Like, yeah, you needed another running back, but did you need to spend a third-round pick on them? So whatever vision that was to begin with. But it's also easier for a general manager up in, you know, the suite on Sundays to say they need to give him the ball more when the coach on the sideline's like, I need to win this game. I don't want this dude in the game right now. You know what I mean?
The thing is, like, the mistake was made when, like, they saw last season and was like, oh, this is a Super Bowl team. All we have to do is add, like, a backup tight end and, running back, and then, like, replace our starting right tackle and right receiver, and we're chilling, and we're going to go win a Super Bowl. And, like, they decided that, like, before free agency in the draft. Like, you could hear, like, coaches and players saying in, like, the Jags hype videos, whatever their off-season video thing is on YouTube, the hunt. So, like, in the hunt, like, in whatever February episode they had, they're, like, already talking about how they're going to go to this year's Super Bowl. And so, like, that's really where the problem started. And so, like, also, like, it's not just a 2023 thing. Like, his guy Tyson Campbell, like, we both like him, but, like, he didn't do much last year. Like, first round draft picks, Trayvon Walker, Devin Lloyd, Trevor Lawrence, and Travis Etienne that like weren't as like productive as you would expect from a first round player. Walker Little like can't really stay on the field or see the field, and so like it's kind of all over the place whether you zoom in closely or zoom out.
Like the 2022 class especially, like Trayvon, the best pick from that class right now, and even that is like you're still hoping for more in year three. Devin Lloyd, like if you had to grade it like on a scale, it's probably like a C, like C plus maybe, you know. Like he got better this year, but he had 2 tackles for loss, 0 sacks, not many quarterback hits, no forced turnovers. He picked up, he was in the right spot a couple times, and he had less pass deflections than a year ago. Like, and then you look at obviously Luke Fortner, Chad Mumo, who like kind of looks like a wasted pick right now, especially in the hindsight if you also just took Ventrell Miller. And maybe the plan was to take 2 linebackers and get out a 4-year contract, but your dudes just haven't developed to the point where you can do that yet. And then when it comes to like Bryn Strange in particular, because I would imagine that's probably one of the ones that sticks in his craw the most, because the Bryn Strange pick is probably the pick that Ibaka's made as a Jaguar general manager. That and I don't know, probably the Bigsby one. It's kind of bad, but 2 happened in 1 year. But those are probably the old Trayvon one, even though that one's a little bit more complex. Like those are probably the 3 picks he gets slammed the most for. And as he also made it very clear, he reads everything. And we'll talk about that, but it makes sense for him to kind of be maybe sensitive over that pick. But like even on draft day, like were they projecting him to be better than Luke Farrell? And why is that your argument for a second round tight end? You know, like just tight ends especially take a while to develop. Everything pointed to a third year tight end like Luke Farrell, who's gotten 2 years of playing experience, to be better than Bryn Strange. But like even in the best case scenario, what was, you know, he providing? And I get why the offensive staff didn't use him. Like he just like he played like a niche role, you know. He probably got used like properly, honestly. Like I'm not gonna blame Doug Peterson for playing the better player, you know. Maybe they thought he wasn't going to be the better player in April, but yeah, I don't think you can blame the coaching staff for not playing the better player. Would it look better for Balky if they didn't play Farrell? Absolutely. But that kind of shows you what the like disconnect in wants and needs from front office and head coach can be sometimes. Like front office wants their picks to look good, even over results sometimes. And head coach, more often than not, they're just trying to win.
Yeah, they live on results.
Yeah.
All right, what's another takeaway you had? Number 2.
Beats everything. The Ryan Nielsen bit was he didn't say many things to me that I thought were just like bizarre or something, or that like he didn't say many things in general that I even maybe disagreed with. He didn't say many things I thought that were outrageous or that were deserving of like a big reaction outside of maybe the Josh Allen stuff, which we'll tackle next. But the one thing he did say to me that I'm just like, come on, you're messing with me when you say this publicly, is the like Ryan Nielsen man versus zone stuff. And the fact that he like opened it saying he doesn't read everything, but he thought the man coverage stuff was overblown. That's so meta, dude. Like you have to be super online to know that's even a thing people are thinking.
Yeah.
That's a thing people are talking about on like Twitter and like websites like my own. It's not like ESPN's running the story like, do the Jaguars need, you know, press corners or anything like that? You know, there's nothing like that. So that
right.
that just showed me like, and for record, all data says that interpretation, you know, is wrong. But I will say inside of the bit and the fact that it's clear that he does read everything, it's interesting to me. If he thinks that about the cornerbacks, then maybe my lock last week of them taking a cornerback in the first round is already kind of busted. I the fact that he said that like a day or two after I said it, I wanted to like pound the table and discuss, because it doesn't matter if he's right or wrong. I think he's wrong about them not potentially needing to revamp the cornerback room because of the scheme. I think he's wrong. What matters is, what he thinks. You know, like he's the dude making decisions, you know. It literally does not matter if he's right or wrong. It just matters what his opinion is, because that is what will shift what he will do. And if that's the way he thinks, if he thinks it's, you know, over-exaggerated or anything like that, then, you know, maybe they're not taking a cornerback at 17. Maybe I look like a buffoon.
I almost feel like he was, like, less trying to say, like, oh, I'm right about, like, my stance on this, and just trying to point at people and be like, no, I'm wrong. Like, no, I hop on the old Bird app. Like, I read all the comments, and, like all these charts are just BS. And, like, he was, like, basically just, like, calling everyone online gamers, I feel like, in that response. And that was it. Like, because I as you said, it's pretty obvious that the Falcons ran a very man-heavy defense in terms of the stats. Like, I think Next Gen Stats and Sports Info Solutions are probably, like, the two best data sources outside of True Media. But, like, you and I don't have True Media or anyone like us. So, and, like, they both have the Falcons, I believe, being number one in the league in amount of, like, press man coverage and just man coverage. And so, like, Balky did bring up a point about, like, match coverages and how, like, zone kind of sort of turns into man sometimes. And, like, that was, like, a true point, but it's, like, that doesn't really, like, make up for the whole thing. Like, it's not, like, all of or the majority of the time that the Falcons were playing man and press man last year. It was, like, actually zone that turned into man. Like, sure, that did happen some of the time. Like, that's an explanation for part of it, but not for all of it. And so, like, I feel like that was, again, just him being, like, just seeing that one, like, next gen stats chart that was posted on Twitter and being like, gamer.
Yeah, the man match thing, I thought, was him, like, just dangling the keys for anybody who wants, like, a simplified, basically, response and can point to that and be like, oh, well, he said, you know, this, etc. So that it'll be interesting to see how much he truly believes that, because I think ESPN put out a stat like that day saying the Falcons ran like the most press coverage in the NFL. So like one way or another, there's going to be an adjustment. The Jaguars ran almost no press coverage under, you know, Mike Caldwell. So end of the day, there's going to be an adjustment. He did seem like he loved Nielsen though. You know, like he seemed like he's a big Nielsen guy.
One of the funniest bits from the whole thing was definitely the fact that Nielsen got like dragged up from Disney World to interview and get the job. That was a nice bit.
But blame the Falcons for that one. Block an interview request, and then these dudes all leave anyways while they hire a defensive-minded head coach, etc. I think the next thing, probably the most important thing, was the Josh Allen dialogue. You know, he said outright that Josh Allen will be a Jaguar next year. He said he didn't want to, like, proclaim that they're going to use a tag or anything like that, but we emphasize again that one way or another, Josh Allen will be a tag, meaning if we have to franchise tag him to make that happen, they will. And then, of course, said that they, you know, haven't started contract conversations with him as of last Thursday. He said there's a start. He said Josh wants to be there. They want him there, etc. They just have to, you know, meet somewhere where they think the money's right. Mike Florio came out with a report. I think it was either the next day or 2 days later where he said Josh Allen's camp. Yeah, that he said Josh Allen's camp was unhappy that basically Balky said that without telling them first that, hey, you know, nothing's really going as of yet. I feel like I said on 1010 like an hour before the press conference. I feel like I've said on here like 5 or 6 times that, yeah, like negotiations haven't started. They won't be starting for a while. Like it just seems like very obvious, just like in all the language that he used, that yeah, Josh Allen will be a Jaguar. It's not him like jumping up and clicking his heels being like, yeah, I can't wait to go out and sign Josh Allen to a big contract. Like, seems like he's begrudgingly like, yeah, I know that he has to get signed. I think they're going to franchise tag him and do the Evan Engram, Cam Robinson thing where they try to work out an extension. The only thing is, this isn't signing a tight end. You know, this isn't signing a like second, third tier left tackle contract. This is a major pass rusher contract. This is so much more complicated than those. It's not something you can just say because you got it done with Engram and Robinson, in my opinion. And Engram, for the record, also, it took them quite a while to get that done. it just doesn't seem like it's something that'll happen very quickly. And if you look back at Balky's history, especially in San Francisco, he's just somebody who, when it comes to these big deals, he's just hesitant. You know, I know he kind of bucked that reputation a bit in free agency a few years ago. That felt more like the situation kind of pushed him to where, you know, he had to so he could field a competitive team. But when it comes to in-house extensions, it just doesn't feel like that's really his MO. And I understand why his camp would be upset if that's the first thing that you hear in this situation. That's not exactly negotiating in good faith. Like, I can't imagine that when negotiations start, the two sides would be close, you know, which I think that they'll obviously have a lot of room to make up. And I don't get why you don't start them. Like, I know they had the defensive coordinator search, but the season's been over for a couple of weeks now. I don't know, but they have some time. You know, they have about a month and a half to get something done. But that I thought was interesting, just outright admitting that, no, we haven't even begun that conversation yet.
For sure. I think a lot of fans like got in a panic last summer because at voluntary training camp, Josh Allen didn't show up and he was training by himself. And then that ended up being like not a worry at all during mandatory training camp. And he ended up having the best season of his career. But I feel like that might have been a little bit of like a warning shot. And then I feel like this like Florio report was definitely a big warning shot where like, obviously, like, I think they were probably already pissed that like they were kind of like waiting around for the Jags to start conversations. But then like when Balky just went and said, yeah, he's going to be wearing a Jaguars uniform in 2024 without having started private conversations. And that was kind of like their last straw. And so then like another warning shot kind of got let off. And so
they just saying, yeah, he'll be a Jaguar next year just doesn't sound or feel as complimentary to me as I think people. Yeah. Like, I know people were obviously happy that he said it, like, because it put away the fear of Josh Allen suiting up for another team. But if you're just looking at it big picture wise, I think it was like a positive thing. It seemed more like him like stating a matter of fact, like, per the NFL rules, like, I control your destiny.
No, totally. Like, literally just a couple of questions after that, he was talking about Trevor and his, like, contract situation. And he said something along the lines of, there's no questions or doubts about, like, where we're at with Trevor long term. Something's going to get done. It's just a matter of when. So I'm paraphrasing that, but, like, he kind of put it into, like, a lengthier answer and, like, more of a long term answer. He definitely said the words long term in relation to Trevor and the words next year in relation to Josh. And like, Josh is different from Cam and Engram, like, partly because he plays like a more premium position, but he's also like kind of premium because he's just like such a hometown guy and is like, I don't know, should be a Jaguar lifer. Where like, if Engram or Cam, like, I know that a lot of people recently have kind of like been fired up about how much Cam kind of means to the team or how much his competitiveness means to the team. But Josh is like the kind of guy like Jalen Ramsey where like he should never ever leave the building, like, without a doubt. And so it'll be interesting to see if the building, even if it has like new people in charge, kind of learn their lesson from last time.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason Josh Allen shouldn't be in the pride of the Jaguars, you know, one day. Like,
yeah,
just not a thing that should happen. It was funny that Balky was talking, you know, at some point in his press conference was like, you know, the good teams have guys in their second, third, fourth contracts. Well, here's a prime example to sign a guy to his second contract and, you know, do exactly that instead of having to, you know, go ahead and restart. Like, it was an incredible bit. Like, do you think that he just wants to see him do it again before he pays him? That's what I assume. I think he doesn't want to pay him for what he sees as 1 year production. I know he's wrong thinking that's the only year he's produced, but I really do think that's how he thinks. And at the end of the day, that's what matters, right?
Yeah, I think at the very least, that's his argument.
Yeah.
Or like not paying him a lot.
I think so too. All right. You mentioned it. Trevor Lawrence, you know, he said a Trevor Lawrence contract will happen eventually. It was kind of a different tune from what they were seeing in last offseason, where it seemed like Doug Peterson was kind of going out of his way to say that they were going to pay Trevor pretty soon. But a lot of times you honestly see coaches kind of talk players up that way more contract wise than maybe front office guys do. You know, coaches obviously deal with them on a closer, more personal level, work with them every day, etc. I thought it was interesting that, yeah, Balky didn't even really mention turnovers with Trevor. Like, he mentioned the injuries. And I downright called them, like, concerning. And it was concerning. You know, four different injuries in a year. Three happening within, like, what was it, a six-week stretch? So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sorry, I should have got the cue for you. Sorry. No. So I don't disagree with him that the injuries, you know, were concerning. And he said that it was a twofold issue, that one, they need to protect him better, but that Lawrence also needs to protect himself. That kind of seems like maybe something that, you know, if Lawrence's camp, you know, inquires about the chances of getting a new contract, maybe that's the argument he goes to, is that he needs to show that he can, you know, have a year where, you know, he stays healthy. It obviously doesn't make any sense, especially when you look at the ways that, you know, he got injured. Like, the fact alone that he's admitting that the team itself played a role in him getting injured so many times. And I also think there were several games like Lawrence probably just shouldn't have played in. You know, if that happens, like, how different is this conversation if he just doesn't play those games, as opposed to the impression now of seeing him playing hurt? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree with you that, like, I think that's going to be, like, Balky's main argument is the health and the injuries, especially, like, what we just saw with, like, Joe Burrow. Like, not that anyone has any doubt right now compared to a year ago that, like, Burrow is going to be the Bengals franchise quarterback, but they did give him, like, the mega deal extension last summer, and then he missed the majority of this season. And, like, it's possible he's – like, I'm sure he's still going to be incredible, but it's possible he's not going to be the same. And so that does provide a lot of recency bias for Balky too. And, like, I think Trevor would say himself that, like, he would, like, take some blame for the injuries and say, like, I got to play, like, a little bit less reckless. But, like, I wrote, like my biggest story of the year pretty much was 2 weeks ago, writing about how, like, nothing was Lawrence's fault because, like, the team – was basically just being powered by him, like, from the playoff push last year to the good start of the season this year. Like, Lawrence was kind of like the catalyst of it. And then it was only, like, once he started to kind of break down, obviously it didn't really hurt that, or didn't help that Christian Kirk got hurt kind of at the same time. And that was, like, a little double whammy. But, like, the reason that he was sustaining a lot of injuries was because, like, A, like you said, the team kept putting him out there, like, immediately after. And then B, like, he felt like he had to put on a superhero cape to, like, really get the team to win and, like, force a team to win, rather than, like, being able to trust kind of, like, the coaches and players around him. And so, again, I think that, like, he would say himself that, like, he needs to be less reckless and he needs to take better care of the ball, even though Balky didn't mention the turnovers. And he does need to, like, kind of take a little bit better care of his body. Like, I think it's, like, the Jaguars' problem first is, like, to give him, like, the weapons and the offensive line and, like, the time to heal and, like, the stuff that he needs to perform and not feel like he has to put on that superhero cape.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the discussion around the offensive line will probably be, you know, centered in that, because Lawrence just can't come right back and say, like, you know, you guys acknowledge that you had one of the worst offensive lines. You put them on T-shirts and, like, proudly exclaim the fact. It's not really something they can, you know, shy away from, that the narrative was out there. The Jaguars were just wrong. I think the offensive line is, like, the next thing. I didn't think he gave, like, a resounding endorsement for Luke Fortner or anything. You know, I know people get upset when anybody says anything positive about Luke Fortner in any way. So when he says that he still believes Luke Fortner can be, like, a good starting center, obviously people are going to lose their minds. But he also talked about the fact that, one, it was a systematic offensive line issue. Two, Fortner himself probably needed to get stronger. And three, he mentioned bringing in competition for guys while talking about Luke Fortner, which to me was, like, very clear. They're going to bring somebody at the very least who can maybe push Fortner. And I'll be honest, you've been at training camp, you know, last year. I remember Fortner's rookie training camp. He's not good in training camp. If it's a competition, I think regardless of who it's against, I think he's going to lose it. Like, he's just not a good practice guy. the pass rush 101s are routinely like, you know, just, you know, kind of a nightmare, especially. So it just goes into things, you know, like that. The fact that he said it was a systematic issue kind of brings me to my next thing. He said it was a systematic offensive line issue. And then he used the word identity 5 different times when talking about their issues. He said he didn't think they had an identity on offense, defense, or special teams, and said openly, you know, who are we? Said they didn't figure that out last year. That's kind of a direct shot at, you know, the utilization and et cetera. He talked about identity, you know, when he got asked directly about, you know, their short yardage situations. He said it's more of a coaching question, but I do think you've got to have an identity. Like, yeah, it's a coaching question, but it's, you know, it's their fault.
Yeah, and, but also the collaboration. That's great. They're close.
Yeah, exactly. Everything, you know, is in lockstep. So it seems like he hates the offense. Yeah, like Michael DeRocco even asked him about like the Albert Breer report that, you know, the front office was, you know, looking at the offense and stuff. And he said that him, Doug, ownership, you know, talk about everything, et cetera, but that Peterson owns the coaching staff. He said he's held responsible for the coaching staff. He supports every decision he makes 100%, but they have discussions basically about everything, but he's 100%, you know, behind any discussions. Basically, to me, it was him openly being like, yeah, like we talked about it, but we talk about a lot of things. But you add in that and all like the stuff he said about the offensive line's identity. Like he mentioned getting in 3-point stances more. it just seems like he hates like the offense, like down to like its bones. Like to me, like it makes sense. Like when you watch them play, do they play like a Trent Baalke offense? You know, like to you, no. It definitely seems like a front office guy who's kind of clashing with the product he's putting on the field.
I totally agree with that, where like I think it's like a lot of clashing, even though he said that it's a great like collaboration and he like kind of shot down the press report. Like he's also like clearly pointing fingers at the offense. But like in the same token, like he's not entirely wrong, because I feel like you said yourself about a month ago, I'm pretty sure, that like the offense doesn't look like it has an identity, and you were kind of like questioning what its identity is. And like that's fair for anyone, like any point in the season. I feel like even when like Lawrence and the entire offense was fully healthy, it was like you could see shades of like the Andy Reid inspired West Coast offense, obviously. But like, I don't know, they like, I feel like RPOs were like their big thing last year, even, and a lot of outside runs for ETN. And like they had like certain stuff that was their go to, or at least they tried to make it their go to. And like it was just a complete disarray this season. And so, again, I agree with what you're saying, that it was mostly just like Baalke not being on the same terms or whatever with the offensive coaches. But I think he was also right about this one.
Yeah, I stand with him in that regard. The Jaguars offensive coaching staff just got Baalke balled. I think
dude, we can everyone got Baalke balled last Wednesday.
Yeah. he said a few things about the defense, how he felt like the defense was searching for plays at the end of the year. Coaches were searching for plays. Like they were really bad against the run. It seemed like he wasn't a fan of the defensive structure either. Like it very much just seemed like he hated watching that team last year. Like, because
didn't we all?
Yeah, because he's not picking. Like, obviously he's picking the players. They're picking the players. Excuse me. But he's not picking how they're utilized. It definitely didn't seem like he was thrilled with how a lot of guys were utilized last year, which I don't know. Maybe that's a conversation shift that they have, you know, this year. Because it was obvious that, you know, he wasn't happy with the deployment of a lot of guys, you know, rookies or not. So it definitely didn't seem like – and it's not just like me – or local people galaxy branding. I think Josh Norris like put out there on Twitter that he watched the press conference and he thought it sounded like a guy who's fractured, you know, with his coaching staff. I don't have any reports or anything, you know, like that. I personally haven't heard anything to those lines, but when your first couple of questions at your first press conference after season are about whether you and the head coach still like each other, and this is not the first time that has occurred. Like, you go back and read like some of his stuff back in San Francisco, and some of the things are the exact same. He's like, no, me and Jim, like, yeah, it's not always great, but we're in lockstep, you know, it's false narratives, etc. Like, it's understandable. All relationships have the ups and downs, and in football, it's, you have to surround yourself with guys who are on the same page to begin with, because when you face adversity, you know, especially in the world of the NFL, if you don't have guys who like are like tight, like, you know, close, they're going to start pointing fingers. And so when you force a marriage basically to begin with, it definitely, you know, would be understandable why when a season goes not the way you want, people are kind of, you know, trying to find the first person they can blame.
Yeah. I think the deployment point is a good one and a little bit of a red flag, because it's one thing if someone like Tank Bigsby just isn't getting a lot of playing time because like he's turning the ball over. But like when there's also like other draft picks who are just being like used in ways that like weren't seen by everyone, kind of like shared under one vision in the organization, then like I feel like that's a real problem. Cause like, it, like, again, it's one thing to kind of like look back in hindsight and be like, oh, my guy that I drafted should have gotten more playing time kind of to show like why he was a good draft pick. But then it's another when like you're kind of like in the draft room or like planning for free agency and you're like not lockstep about like what players are going to fit what you want to run. Like, I feel like that's a really big problem. And so hopefully he gets in lockstep with Ryan Nielsen at least.
Yeah, no, 100%. Good.
I mean, you look back at Peterson's 2 years and maybe he just doesn't really like playing rookies. Like, you had to play Trayvon. He's the number one pick. You had to play Devin Lloyd. Because even if you didn't play Devin Lloyd, you're playing another rookie at linebacker. So you're playing a rookie, you know, either way. You didn't have to play Luke Fortner, I guess, but it always seemed like they were going to roll with him over Shatley regardless. And then other than that, how many rookies, other than Anton, obviously, have been set to play right away? I think that's it.
Yeah.
So that's what, four rookies out of, I think they've made 18, 19 picks the last 2 years who are like day one starters. That's crazy. You know, that's, so maybe Peterson just doesn't like playing rookies, but you can also say maybe they don't give him good enough rookies. I don't know. Like you said, it's like a chicken, the chicken egg, you know, conversation. Yeah. Either way, they have their problems. It definitely seems like Balky doesn't think they have drafting problems, but they do. I guess my final word in the press conference was it felt like a vintage Trent Baalke press conference. You know, like I've had my disagreements with moves that Trent Baalke's made before. I've never been shy to criticize. It's just like I was never shy to criticize Dave Caldwell and how, if I'm still around, I won't be shy to criticize the next general manager, you know, I ever cover. But just like his style and how he handles things, like it definitely feels like he has a pulse on. Like, he knows what the criticisms are, and he's basically just going to find a way to throw it back, like, you know, in the face. And it also didn't seem to me like he thought that they needed, like, a ton to fix and that they just needed, like, little tweaks here and there, which makes sense and is also wrong at the same time. So
I thought the same thing. We didn't even have to explain it, but I was on the same wavelength with you with that one. My final word from the presser was just, we all got Balky balled.
Yeah. It was good stuff. It was a vintage Trent Baalke press conference. I couldn't have asked for anything more or anything less. Yeah. Anything else on it, Gus?
No, I've got a great hot take though, so I'm excited for the next segment.
All right, perfect. Well, we're going to cut for a break and we'll be right back.
All right, John. So there's good news and there's bad news. I'll start
with the bad news.
Yeah, the bad news is that the best take I've had on this podcast died this past weekend. About 11 or 12 months ago, we were doing a podcast, and I said the Baltimore Ravens will win Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas. And that was, I'd assume I said that after they hired Todd Monken to be their offense coordinator, but it was certainly far before they had Lamar Jackson signed under contract. And I was riding that take all the way through the season, but they fell to the Chiefs last weekend. And so now I need to replace my best take ever with a new one. So I've got a new best take ever.
So you're saying I was right, for the record?
in holding me to that Super Bowl prediction.
Yeah, the Ravens. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. You definitely deserve a little bit of the credit. I guess it's a good thing I didn't, but I should have bet on it anyway. And if I won anything, I would have sent you like 5%.
All right, let's hear it.
Cut. You get 5 points. All right, so the new take. I think this is going to be the second best take I've come up with on the show. Is that the Jaguars are going to enter the 2024 season with Tyson Campbell and Darius Williams as their two best cornerbacks, unless they trade a third-round pick to the New Orleans Saints for four-time Pro Bowl corner Marshon Lattimore. So here's the thinking. Like you were talking about a little bit about it earlier, where Baalke said at his press conference something that made you go, oh, maybe they're not going to take a cornerback day one. Certainly cornerback is at like near the top of the list of like their biggest needs, but like everyone kind of knows that interior on both sides of the ball is up there too. And so may not see a cornerback taken in the first round. I think Legarius Sneed would be like a home run A++ free agency signing, but I also doubt that he leaves Kansas City. Same goes for Jalen Johnson in Chicago. And so like Darius Williams, if he is on the roster like to start the new league year in mid-March, then I think he's going to be a starter in the 2024 season, because like the Jags aren't going to just like cut someone that talented like after free agency or after the draft, like partly because it would kind of screw Williams for the next year in terms of like the money he could get, but also like they're not going to just like kind of create a hole when they don't have an opportunity to fill that hole. So basically, like, I think if Williams is on the roster in mid-March, he's going to be on the roster in mid-September. And so if the Jags do want to like make an aggressive move at cornerback and like upgrade Williams' specific position specifically, so essentially I think like the only way that they don't cut or I think the only way that they cut Williams is if they make a trade for Marshon Lattimore before free agency starts. And Nick Underhill of NewOrleansFootball.com wrote an article titled, "Will the Saints Trade Marshon Lattimore? What Could They Get for the Star Cornerback?" about a week or two ago, because the Saints restructured his contract. The Saints are always restructuring their contracts, but Nick is a respected beat reporter, and like he's not the kind of guy that would like write an article with that title just for the sake of clicks or anything. Like he's doing some kind of reporting, and like the article is behind a paywall, so I don't have a lot of other details other than that. But the fact that like a reporter like him is suggesting it, and like not just like a Bleacher Report writer, and he just had a contract restructure to make it so that like he gets a signing bonus at the beginning of the season instead of the beginning of the new year or something like that. Plus, there's a lot of like obvious connections. Ryan Nielsen coached Marshon Lattimore for a couple years in New Orleans. Same with Chris Richard, the new passing game coordinator or cornerbacks coach or whatever he is. They both coached Marshon Lattimore in New Orleans. And then last year during the draft, Trent Baalke made a trade to trade down with Mickey Loomis, and the Saints traded up. And so, yeah, I think I'm like Charlie Kelly in that one meme where he's putting all the dots together. So I think Marshon Lattimore is going to be a Jaguar is essentially the take.
I like it. I like it. I like going down the limb like that. All right, put it down that Marshon Lattimore will be a Jaguar. I want you to know that's what I'm holding your feet to the fire to. I think it'd be like a Trent Baalke like level like type move. Like it'd be probably like the type of aggressive move that they need to make if they want to, you know, probably get over the hump, or at least as all general managers want to show that they're trying to get over the hump. You don't even need to do it in a lot of cases. You just need to show that, you know, you made the effort. And plus, like you said, you know, ton of coaching, obviously, connections. And he can still go, man. You know, he's still a good cornerback. So I like that.
I don't think he finished last year completely healthy. And I think the past 2 years has been a little bit up and down health-wise, which is part of the reason he would potentially be on the trading block. But when he is healthy, he's, like, still fantastic for sure. And, like, obviously, coming from the Saints, he'd be – a perfect scheme fit for Nielsen's press man coverage. And so having him and Tyson as like your two corners would be a pretty sweet duo.
Yeah. Plus, Balky got pictured with Doug Peterson. I mean, not Doug Peterson, Doug Marone, Saints offensive line coach at the Senior Bowl. Yeah.
A lot of thoughts being connected here. I said a third rounder for him because Jalen Ramsey got traded to the Dolphins for pick 77 overall, I think it was.
That's crazy. They're,
yeah, it is. But like they're both like not washed, but like older, I guess. Like the really good veteran cornerbacks who are expensive and have like a little bit of injury history. And so like I think a third rounder would get it done for the Saints.
Yeah, he'll be 28 next, like in week one.
And Darius is gonna turn 31 in like a month or two.
Yeah. What?
So there it is. People are saying, get your Lattimore 23 views now.
Yeah, the people are saying. All right. Last episode, we weren't able to get to some fan questions, so we're gonna go ahead and take them now. Gus mentioned that quite a few people. Yeah, 23 replies. So haven't filtered them to see which ones are actually serious. I can never depend on 100% serious question answers in this regard. So we'll go through them and see what we got. First one's from Demetrius Harvey, you know, good old pal, the TU, says, looking back at Darius Williams' time in LA, it seemed like you played a lot of press man and did well. Do you guys see the same, or do you feel like they ran a different style of man there than what Nielsen brings? Answer off the air. Well, this answer is on the air, and I'll be honest, I don't really have any takes on the Rams 2021-2020 defense. It was Raheem Morris in 2021, right? And Vic Fangio in – not Vic Fangio. Brandon Staley in 2020, correct? Yeah.
That's so, right.
I mean – Raheem and Staley, are those two guys known for like predominantly man and press coverage?
No, I think like Staley will use it like time to time, like his like kind of like famous game plan against the Dolphins last year. His corners used press, but like I wouldn't say a lot. So like I kind of with you where like I don't know exactly how Darius Williams was used in that Rams scheme, but like just to kind of repeat what I think I said last week, I think Darius would like be fine as a starter. Like obviously Marshawn Lattimore or someone like that would be an upgrade, and they should certainly add to the position even for long term, if not for short term. And so like I think they could go into the season like with Tyson and Darius being their like two best cornerbacks during training camp, but it would be nice to upgrade or at least like get like a rookie in the building who's like has a potential to be better than Darius by the end of the season.
Yeah,
I'm because like especially with like the man coverage scheme, where like when you run like cover zero and so many like blitz looks, like you really need like not just like one or two guys who can live on an island, but like three or almost even four. And so like I think like Darius is like, even if he's not a perfect scheme fit, I think he's a good enough scheme fit that they could keep him around.
Yeah, don't necessarily, you know, disagree with you. I think he's the type of player who, at the very least, like he can still, like you said, he can be on the roster either way. It's just there are more avenues to upgrading, you know, via this game than any other one. All right, next one from Robert Leahy. Are there any worries that the Falcons' defensive improvements were because of an extremely weak schedule just as much as they were because of the Nielsen addition? No, they played that same weak schedule every other year they've been a franchise. So, no. I don't think that's even like half a percent of the thing I believe in.
Yeah, I mean the Falcons like did play an easy schedule last year. Like if you look at EPA and success rate, the Falcons did a little bit better in those metrics than they did in DVOA because DVOA adjusts for opponent strength. But like the Falcons were still a good defense by DVOA, so like it wasn't that much of a difference.
No, that's not a bad point. All right, next one. Not going to read the at. So, Steven, private account. Does this mean Trayvon will get more snaps inside? Like, maybe marginally, but I wouldn't think, like, that many. And Nielsen likes big edges, so he's going to want Trayvon on the edge, you know, probably as much as possible. Like, I think you're going to see him, like, a lot of, like, pass rush games and stuff that, you know, maybe send him inside, but maybe not a lot of him lining up truly inside.
Yeah, I think there still will be, like, a noticeable difference going from scheme to scheme, just, like, because even if he's going to be, like, in, like, on an edge player and an edge defender in both last year and this upcoming year, I think he's going to, like, have had a hand off the dirt last year, and he's going to have a hand in the dirt this year, and that could make, like, a world of difference, because, like, the get-off that you get as a defensive lineman makes a really big difference snap to snap. And, like, we've seen that Trayvon's get-off is way better when he's in a three-point stance. And so I think, like, even though, like at a certain point, like, him just putting a hand in the dirt is, like, kind of become, like, an overblown thing, like, it still will make a big difference.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. I think, honestly, him dropping in the coverage less might be the biggest other difference, honestly. Like, he just had 10 sacks. I don't think they're going to take him off the edge anytime soon.
Yeah. Right. No, I think he's going to be, like, set up really well as, like, kind of, like, the big end or, like, the strong side end in Nielsen's defense. I think that's probably, like, I mean, I talked a lot about, like, Cisco being, like, his new Jesse Bates, but I feel like Trayvon is probably, like, the single best defender in terms of, like, fit for Nielsen.
Yeah, no, I think a Nielsen hire can be, like, a boon for his career, honestly. So I'm with you. Next from Kyle. How do you think the aggressiveness of the defense will affect Doug Stewie of offense and complementary football? I'm not sure that there's any schemes that complement each other well. It's good offense and good defense, really. You know, like, if the defense isn't allowing Derrick Henry to run all over them while the offense scores 10 points in his first two possessions and get out to a 14-10 deficit, then they'll complement his offense, you know, well. A good defense will complement his offense. It goes as simple as that, I think.
The Chiefs have been a good example of that in the playoffs so far, because, like, against the Bills, they kind of lit up the scoreboard because, like, they knew that, like, Josh Allen is also kind of like a superhuman who can go toe-to-toe with Mahomes. And so they really had to put a lot of points on the board. And then against the Ravens, like, they were able to kind of get out to an early lead and let the defense win that game for them. And so, I mean, they've definitely been, like, kind of carried by the defense a lot, but I mean, they also have Patrick Mahomes, and so I think they've done a good job of kind of balancing this year of, like, not leaning too much on Mahomes, but then obviously not leaning too much on the defense when you do have Mahomes.
Oh, no, 100%. The Chiefs right now are, like, the best case of, like, a defense supporting a quarterback, I think. They can win any style of game.
And vice versa, too, because, like, Mahomes is, like, playing mistake-free right now, which is incredible because, like, as cool as, like, his sidearm throws and, like, backyard football plays are, like, the best thing about him is how he plays, like, mistake free and just always makes the right decisions, and then he gets all of those, like, highlight plays on top of it. So he does a really good job of, like, just, like, not putting his defense in bad spots too.
Yeah, that's a good call. All right, next one. Who would you love at pick 17? I feel like that one doesn't come from a listener. I couldn't name you 17 players in the draft, let alone who I think would be a good pick. I think just from watching, like, the Senior Bowl coverage on Twitter, that Toledo cornerback, you know, Kenyon Mitchell, looks pretty impressive. I mean, definitely doesn't seem like a guy who's going to go in the 30s, like people were saying, you know, pre-Senior Bowl. So, I don't know. He'd be an interesting guy. I think the Oregon Center has looked, you know, pretty – I think what you would expect for, like, a draft's top center to look like, but also there's been, like, three or four different centers I've seen people say have a case as the best center. So if it is a deep center draft, I don't think that's I don't think the Jaguars were a center, first round center away from being a competitive, you know, team necessarily. So that's more or less where I stand right now. I'm not going to fall into the trick of mocking them of pass rusher again. I'm not going to do it, Gus. I did it last year. I entertained the idea, Nolan Smith, all of that. I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to project them a dang pass rusher. They'll draft one eventually, but I'm not going to project one in the first round. They have
trained. Even if a guy like Jared Verse from Florida State or whoever that guy is from Alabama, if either of them are there at 17, they're picking someone else.
If Nolan Smith's at 29, are they picking someone else? See? If I had told you a week before the draft they would trade down to 29 or where 27, wherever the hell they picked, and they pass on Nolan Smith, you would have called me crazy, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But the draft is just, man, we get caught up so easily in reports, right, and which some of them aren't even reports. Excuse me. Yeah, I feel like you can't really be like a screen watcher for the Senior Bowl. It'd be way better to be there in person and watch it rather than just kind of like base stuff off of either NFL Network or Twitter. But with that said, that Toledo kid looks incredible. I would definitely be happy with him at 17 as things stand right now. I was kind of struggling to come up with another name. I feel like it's either him or like someone that's like really cool falls, like Brock Bowers somehow makes it all the way to the teens.
That'd be something, wouldn't it?
I was thinking about that earlier. Like, I don't think that it will happen, but like if Brock Bowers did make it to 17, I would say there's like a 8% chance that happens. But if it happens, like, do the Jaguars just have to take him?
Do you think what are the odds you think they'd pass on him and then say, we have a talented tight end and we took him in the second round last year?
I mean, 100% that would be with their argument or their reasoning or whatever.
Yeah. All right. Next one. 3-4 or 4-3 or both. And will that decision be based on personnel available, or will the personnel acquired be based on that decision? Well, that's
really
getting into the nitty gritty. I mean, just a simple answer. Like the simple answer is like me and you don't know, you know, like until Brian Nielsen talks, like nobody knows that he's traditionally like a 4-3 guy in base, but he ran a lot of multiple fronts with Atlanta last year. And you're also mostly a nickel. So it just, that conversation just doesn't really matter as much as people think anymore. Like I know like the biggest thing is your edges will drop in pass coverage in the 3-4 is the biggest difference. And how many times really, you know, were they doing that? People complain because it was a few notable times, but it's not like they're doing it like 50% of their snaps or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, I think the answer to both of those questions is both, because like it's going to be both a 4-3 and a 3-4 and a 4-2 and a 3-3-5 and like a bunch of different fronts. And it's going to be based off both players who are here already, like Josh Allen and Trayvon and Devon Hamilton, as well as players that they're eventually going to bring in both this year and in future years. And so like it's somewhere in the middle for both of them. But like if you have to make a binary, I think it's like more of a 4-3 than it is a 3-4 in at least Nielsen's vision for a perfect defense. And then like if it's his vision for a perfect defense, it would probably be more of players that he brings in versus guys that are here.
I mean, some guys he'll be forced to fit because there are some guys who just cap wise like have to be there, you know. Right. Yeah, so I'm with you on that one. Okay, let's pull up the next one. How many 2023 starters could be released for cap purposes based on Nielsen's emphasis? Maybe Williams. I think Jenkins would have been released if they hired you as defensive coordinator. Fatakasi, I don't think. Fatakasi, I think also. It doesn't really matter.
Agreed. No notes.
Yeah. So, all right, let me move on to the next one. Okay. John, I hate when they start my name. That's what I know they're about to go in. About to
oh, that's so true.
Okay.
Bless you.
Yes, thank you. John, while you were adamant about taking a corner, who else is on your radar outside of corner? If possible, do you hear anything this early on the process as who the Jaguars might have interest in? No, not this early. I know there was – thank you. I know there was something from, like, the Jets ESPN reporter saying their GM has already fallen in love with the offensive tackle. I've never seen that.
That's the tweet of the week.
I've never seen something like that this early. Mostly you start hearing about things, like, about around the combine. Like, that's when you started hearing about Trayvon, really, from agents and stuff, was around the combine. That's when you started hearing, like, oh, you know, Trent Baalke actually really likes Trayvon Walker, et cetera. So – I think corner still has a chance to be the pick, despite Baalke having a chance to do the funniest thing and make a pick strictly to own me. I think interior offensive line and interior defensive line could also be the pick. So, hey, maybe he takes a right tackle. Maybe he just, you know, just laughs his ass off and takes a right tackle. That'd be I have to tip my hat to it. It'd be funny. It'd be funny, man.
I feel like the draft sets up just like so perfectly for corner, because I feel like Terrion Arnold is gonna go before 17 for sure. But then, like, even though Cooper DeJean isn't a great scheme fit, and like I feel like I like Mitchell more than Wiggins from Clemson right now. Like, there's like just gonna be a run of corners in like the teens, or like even in like the early 20s. So I feel like the Jags are set up well for that. And an offensive line in general would just be my answer to the question of like what would come after corner.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. All right. Any concerns with front office turmoil with a potential power struggle with Doug and Trent, or is this just us overanalyzing from the outside? No, I don't concern myself with those things. Two, we kind of already addressed it. When you lose people, point fingers. And three, yes, you are overanalyzing it from the outside, regardless of what, even if it's like valid and a thing, you're probably still overanalyzing. If you're analyzing it, you're overanalyzing it.
Yeah, well said. No notes. Yeah.
All right. The Snead or a big time man corner become a top priority in free agency or the draft? I really don't know. I really don't know how they're going to attack it. I think I agree with you. I don't think they're going to throw money at a corner free agency. I think they add to the position, but I don't think they pay like a Snead or a Jalen Johnson.
Yeah. So what you should do generally is address your needs in free agency so that you can like draft for value in April. And so like they should, even if they don't get a Snead, which again, like I don't think he is going to end up leaving Kansas City, but he would be perfect. Like, even if you don't get a Snead, you got to, like, add at least, like, one body to that room so that, like, the draft doesn't come around and you're like, oh, we absolutely have to take a cornerback in the first two rounds. Like, you just want to, like, pigeonhole yourself as little as possible for the draft. And so, like, I feel like a guy like Stephon Gilmore would be a really good fit because he's, like, can win and press man. He's, like, a veteran guy who wouldn't cost, like, a ton of money. The Cowboys have a lot of contracts to sign, so I'd be a little surprised if he re-ups there. But so like someone who's like ideally good enough to start, but at the same time is going to break the bank. You need someone in like that free agency.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just come out and say it. Several of these next questions are stuff like, what is the process like interviewing your coordinator? How are they going to choose personnel based on Nielsen scheme, power struggle, etc. It's going to go ahead and outright say, like, we've one, already feel like we kind of answered those, and two, I don't have anything new to add to any of that. What are the concerns with Nielsen? Seeing a lot of the pop so far. I mean, the fact that I guess he's only been a coordinator for 2 years.
That's it. I feel like that was the only thing I could come up with last year, is that, like, the only thing I could think of was that his lack of experience calling plays.
His defenses don't get many takeaways, but I also don't think takeaways are a coach thing at all. I think it's mostly luck.
Yeah, it's definitely – I think coaches can play, like, a little bit into it because you can kind of, like, get into your head about it. And, like, I don't know. I think luck is definitely the majority factor, though. But I think with Nielsen, like, one potential worry would have been, like, the staff that he hired. But, like, that worry has already been, like, kind of, like, checked off as no longer a worry because essentially of one hire when he brought in Chris Richards to be, like, the secondary coach and maybe defensive passing game coordinator. Again, I forget what his official title is. But, like, before the Nielsen hire happened, I was kind of going back and forth of, like, whether it would be best for the Jaguars to get a guy who was really good at coaching the secondary or really good at coaching the defensive line because – like the defensive line was kind of like the biggest weakness for the defense last year. There's so many, like, I mean, between Antonio Johnson and Andre Sisco and Tyson Campbell, there's some like exciting young guys in the secondary. And the Jags ended up like not choosing really between the two of them, but got two guys who can coach like both units really well and like marry the two of them together. I was listening to Coach Campo from 1010XO on his podcast talking about how his one concern would have been that like Nielsen is going to like solve a lot of the issues with the front and solve a lot of issues with like the run defense, yeah, but like, he would need someone to like help out with the pass defense, and he ended up getting that guy. So again, like there's can't really think of any true worries for him.
Yeah, no, whenever the Chris Richard hire is made official, I think that's like a legit game changer. Like, he was fantastic coach in New Orleans, good pass defenses in Dallas, good pass defenses, good player development in New Orleans. He's obviously been a really good coach throughout his career. All right, last one, Gus. Can the Jags get a comp pick for Ridley in 2025 if he signs elsewhere in free agent? They can't, free agency. They can. It just, like, the reason they got so many comp picks this year is because they didn't sign anybody. Like, you're not going to get any comp picks if you're aggressive in free agency. So, I don't think you can let Ridley walk and say you're doing it so you can get a high comp pick if you're going to be aggressive in free agency anyways. Like, if you're going to be aggressive, you got to keep Ridley.
Yeah, like, the comp pick, like, it might work out for you down the road, but, like, you shouldn't make any decision based off of that. And I feel like Ridley, like, a big reason that I expect him to stay is partially because, like, there would just be such a hole in the position group if he, like, left and they didn't really have a plan. So, like, the same argument I was making with, like, the Marshawn Lattimore take where, like, Darius Williams isn't going to, like, just get cut unless they, like, actually have, like, kind of, like, a plan or at least more time for a plan. But I think the depth chart for the receivers would just be so dire that, like, they kind of have to bring Ridley back even if they don't have the tag, like, accessible to them.
Yeah, we're in lockstep on that one. I think Ridley's going to hit free agency and then they bring him back. But, I mean, you run the risk of him obviously fielding other offers. Here's my thing. You're Trent Baalke. I'm Ridley's agency. Ridley wants 2 years, $34 million, $25 million guaranteed. If you're Trent Baalke, you do that deal? So that's $17 million a year, $25 million guaranteed over 2 years.
I don't know. I feel like I have to like look more at numbers, but I'm sure he's going to come up with some reason. Be like similar to how you were saying with like Lawrence, like he's like, and even with Josh Allen, like, oh, I got to see it one more time. Like Ridley did have like an incredible season. Like, I don't think he should have been the comeback player of the year, but he definitely should have been a finalist for it. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Baalke was like, no, I don't want to give him $25 million guaranteed because I've only seen it for 1 year. I want to give them like maybe 34 over 2 years, but with 15 guaranteed.
That's fair. All right, guys. You got anything else for us?
I got one take that maybe I'll explain a little bit more last week, but I think the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl by double digits.
Ooh. Poor Lions. I hate the Lions for that loss because all of, like, the Purdy, like, push glasses up. Guess he's not a game manager now tweets when, yeah, the scrambles were impressive, but it's, like, literally the story of the game was a ball bounced off the face of a Lions guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's it, you know. Like, he is God's favorite child. He does have some of the best luck of any quarterback I've ever seen. That's why I am bowing out of that fight, so. Patrick Mahomes, save the discourse. That's all I can really
please,
say.
Please, Pat, please.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back next Wednesday. This was episode 88 of the Jaguar Report. God, who would have thought, guys? Who would have thought? So I'm John Shipley, my co-host friend, Gus Logue. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll be back next week.